Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
Michigan... Where's the Michigan... Michigan school shooter, a terrorist? Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist, and your terrorist therapist. Well, we have a sort of unusual alleged terrorist today. His name is Ethan Crumbly, and you probably have heard about him. He is the 15-year-old who was the latest school shooter, and it was actually the most horrendous school shooting since 2018, the Parkland, Florida school shooting by Nicholas Cruz. He killed four students, and there are other students who were wounded and a teacher who was wounded as well. So let me first give you a little bit of an outline of what happened, and then I will explain about the terrorism part and get more into the story, because his story is just so fascinating. I could talk to you for 2 hours, but I know you don't worry. I'm not. I'm going to pick the highlights. But what makes it so interesting, I mean, of course, it's devastating, it's terrible, it's so tragic, and, you know, all my wishes go out to the families and to the other students and so on. So this story began on Friday, November 26th. That was Black Friday. And on that day, Ethan Crumbly's father, James Crumbly, bought a semi-automatic pistol for him, for the boy, for his son, Ethan. And he took Ethan with him to the store where he bought the gun. And, you know, which kind of tells you a lot just in that short little description, because in Michigan, where this happened, people who are underage, minors, aren't allowed to possess guns. So by the father not only buying him a gun, but taking him to the gun store to buy the gun, it gives you an insight into the father. And both the father and the mother are sociopaths. You'll hear more about that in a bit. And so, you know, because what he's showing him when he took him to the store was that he's flouting the law. You know, he knew what the law was, at least the father did, and presumably the son did as well. And he's showing the son that it's okay to not obey the law. Then Ethan posted a photo on social media, and he wrote, "Just got my new beauty today." And he's talking about the gun. And he has a picture of the gun. And he put a heart emoji. I mean, so that is a warning, one of the first warning signs. He actually posted a number of things online that were warning signs. So that was the Friday, November 26th. Then the day before the shooting, November 29th, a teacher of his at Oxford High School in Michigan, saw that Ethan was searching through his cell phone for ammunition in school. And the teacher reported this to the school officials, and the school left Ethan's mother, Jennifer, a voicemail. She didn't answer. Then they sent an email to the parents. They didn't answer. Then later, the mother sent a text to her son, which showed that she obviously got the text from the school and or got text from him regarding this. She sent a text to her son saying, LOL, I'm not mad at you. You have to learn not to get caught. Sociopathic at its core. Then the next day, November 30th, that is the day of the shooting, and a teacher finds an alarming note that Ethan had written. She came across a note. She took a picture of it, fortunately. That was really quick thinking, because, in fact, afterwards, the note was changed. Ethan, presumably, he crossed out parts of the note. He didn't want people to see it. But what it was a drawing of a semi-automatic handgun pointing at the words, "The thought won't stop, help me." And it had a drawing of a bullet with "blood everywhere" written above it. "Blood everywhere" was written above the drawing of the bullet. And then between the drawing of the gun and the bullet is a drawing of a person who appears to have been shot twice and bleeding. And then below that, there's a laughing emoji. And he also in his note, he wrote, "My life is useless. The world is dead." And that's really kind of interesting for a number of reasons. First of all, kids these days with the pandemic who have been kept in lockdown and kept away from school and, you know, not really able to know that there is going to be life after COVID. Are feeling that way, the world is dead, that there is not going to be a world after that. And then, but also, "my life is useless, the world is dead," that also relates to his what his parents feel, and I'll explain that later. So his parents were ordered to come to school that day, the morning of the shooting. You have to keep the timeline in mind because it's just horrific when you think about it. And they were told, the school told them that they have to get counseling for their son within 48 hours or else the school would contact Child Protective Services. So clearly the school realized there was a problem in that home and there was a problem with this student who was basically suicidal and also potentially homicidal. You know, the drawing was of him, this gun shooting somebody. And when the parents came to school, they didn't ask where the gun was. They didn't look in his backpack. They wouldn't take him home. The school wanted the parents to take Ethan home because this was very, this was a severe warning sign. You know, these were very worrisome, shall we say, items and information that they had already come up with in these 2 days. But the parents wouldn't take him home. And the school, this is where the school messed up as well, they just put him back in class. And then shortly after 1 p.m., on school surveillance cameras, they see Ethan with a backpack, and then he goes into the bathroom, and then a minute later, he comes out of the bathroom without the backpack and with a gun in his hand, and he starts firing the gun outside the bathroom and going down the hallway at what's described as a methodical pace, shooting at the students. And, you know, he was observed to be shooting them at very close range, like in the head, which is kind of what you learn how to do on violent video games. And he has an older half-brother, and his older half-brother talked about how Ethan played violent video games like Fortnite after when he would come home from school. So at 1:22, so after the shooting had already begun for like about 20 minutes or so, Ethan's mother texted him, "Ethan, don't do it." Now, we don't know yet whether she had gotten a text from him right before he started shooting saying, "I'm shooting," or whether she had already heard on the news that there was this shooting at the school. But in any case, a little late, she was saying, "Ethan, don't do it." By that point, four students had already been fatally wounded. Then at 1:37, the father, James Crumbly, called 911, saying that a gun was missing from his house and he believed his son may be the shooter. And his father had stored the gun in an unlocked drawer in the parents' bedroom. So, now before I get into a little bit more about the shooting and about the parents and so on, and how Ethan got to be that way, let me just tell you a little bit about how this relates to terrorism. First of all, Ethan, the son, is being charged with the following charges, which mean that he could face a possible life sentence, life without parole. He's being charged as an adult, and he's being charged with one count of terrorism causing death, four counts of first-degree murder, seven counts of assault with intent to murder, and 12 counts of possession of a firearm in the commission of a felony. Now, the prosecutor has decided that, and this is part of why they're charging him as an adult, that it was not an impulsive act. It was premeditated. And that's because they found things. They found a journal in his backpack that described how he wanted to create this rampage and shoot his kids, the kids in his school. And there was also, he also had recorded the night before a video on giving his plans of what he was going to do, killing his schoolmates. So clearly this was not, he didn't wake up one day, that day, November 30th, and think, I think I'll go murder my schoolmates. Clearly he had been thinking about it for a long time, and then his father literally put the gun in his hand. Now, terrorism, I'm going to stop here, but when we come back, I'm going to explain why it's not typical that terrorism, that in cases like this, people are charged with terrorism, but, this is a special case and there are reasons why this is happening. So I'll explain that, and then I'll go into the stories about more into the psychology, the family dynamics of Ethan's family, which are very sick. I can give you a spoiler alert. His family is very sick. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking today about Michigan school shooter, a terrorist. And now I'm going to talk to you more about why he is being charged with terrorism. First of all, they're talking about domestic terrorism, and there is no federal statute against domestic terrorism. It is really up to states whether they call mass shootings terrorism. So Michigan, where this happened, does happen to have an anti-terrorism laws on the books that are broad enough to potentially cover mass shootings and call them terrorism on a state level, not a federal level. Now, the prosecutor, who is really excellent, I watched the arraignment of the parents. Yes, let me just put in here. The parents, these sociopaths, not only did they do these horrible, not only did they turn their son into a sociopath, but after he was arrested, and there was wind of the parents being arrested and charged in this, the parents ran away. They fled. And their lawyer, so there was an arraignment because finally the parents were found. And although their lawyers tried to say that, oh, they never fled, we were in touch with them. In fact, the parents had turned off their cell phones and stopped answering the phone calls and the text messages of their own lawyers. I mean, they didn't want to be found. Like if their cell phone was on, the cell towers could have been pinged and the authorities could have found them. So anyhow, but they were finally found because they were hiding in the basement of a commercial building, and someone apparently gave them the key to that building who has been found, but so far that person's name hasn't been released in the media. But in any case, so they found the parents and they brought them to an arraignment, and I watched the arraignment, and this prosecutor, the Oakland County prosecutor, Karen McDonald, did a very good job, and she got the judge to put a $500,000 bond on each of the parents. So the parents are in jail now. Hopefully no one will, for whatever crazy reason, no one will pay the $500,000 bond for either of them. And so they will stay in jail. They were caught very close to the Canadian border. And it's not clear why they were like different descriptions, half a mile or very, very, very close. So it's not clear why they didn't try to go over the border. Maybe they were afraid that their names and their pictures there were wanted posters out for them. So perhaps they were afraid that the people at the border would recognize them from these wanted posters. In any case, the parents are now in jail. So my point is that the prosecutor did a really good job because the two lawyers that are the defense lawyers for the parents wanted them to have a $50,000 or $100,000 bond, and you know they could well have found somebody to post that, or they could have posted it. In any case, getting back to terrorism, this prosecutor said that when her team sat down to talk about the charges that they were going to charge Ethan with, the shooter, she said a question lingered. What about all these other children? Quote, what about all the children who ran screaming, hiding under desks? What about all the children at home right now who can't eat and can't sleep and can't imagine a world where they could ever set foot back in that school? Those are victims too, and so are their families, and so is the community. And the charges of terrorism reflect that. Okay. Now, I'll just add that in some states, the definition of terrorism is closer to what we think of with international Islamic terrorism, and some are written more broadly, like the law in Michigan. Okay, now let me tell you all the crazy stuff in there, his family. If you've wondered what kind of parents could put a gun in their son's hand, put up congratulatory posts on social media, and laugh about his being caught searching for ammunition, you found out what kind of parents they were if you watched their arraignment, which, by the way, you can still find on the internet. It became clear during the arraignment that the parents, were planning on throwing their son under the bus, because one of the big issues is access to the gun. And so the parents, I see it coming, the parents, they're going to try to say that they didn't give the son access, that I don't know what they're going to come up with how they locked it up and somehow he got it. I don't know. You know, clearly the prosecutor knows that it was unlocked. But something, we're going to hear all kinds of stuff where the parents are going to blame the son. And now what kind of parents would blame their child it really upsets me a lot that there are parents like this, who could go to jail for life. Their son could go to jail for life without the possibility of parole. And yet these parents who fled, tried to flee, are blaming the son. So in other words, they are trying to save their own necks at the expense of their son, even if this means their son will never get out of jail, even if it's them who made him this way. By the way, a fun fact, this is all happening in the Oakland County Courthouse in Michigan, which is the same courthouse that I testified in as an expert witness, a defense expert witness, as a psychiatrist, forensic psychiatrist, for Jonathan Schmitz in the Jenny Jones talk show murder trial some years ago. That was my first high-profile trial. And so when I see these pictures of the courthouse and the jail, well, of course, I spent countless hours in the jail talking with John, preparing, examining him to find out about his psychology before he shot Scott Amador. You'll have to look all that up. Had to do with the talk show where they ambushed John, who is not a hate crime. He is not homophobic, but you have to look it up. I am writing a book about this, by the way. It's coming, taking a while to come together, but I have written most of it. In any case, moving on, let me tell you about his parents and how they created a terrorist, right? Okay, so Jennifer and James Crumbly, the parents. These parents are very angry at the world because of their inability to achieve success, economically and otherwise. They have criminal histories, including driving under the influence and writing bad checks. The sign of a sociopath, one of the signs of a sociopath is when you have a criminal history, especially starting back. This didn't just happen. This started a while ago for both of them. So, as I said, they are sociopaths who feel entitled to flout the laws of society, and they raised Ethan to become one. They may be alcoholics, which could explain in part their spotty job histories. You know, there are so many different descriptions of places and the places that they worked and jobs that they worked. But I can tell you that the father has been fired at least once. He's had periods of unemployment. Both of them have had as a spotty job histories. They've had relatively low level jobs, except the father may have had a higher level job at one point, but then he lost it. And for several years, the father worked as a telemarketer from home. So that's not exactly, a go-getter. Or a prestigious job. And I'm sorry to all of you who are listening to this who are telemarketers, but you know you do it only as a temporary kind of thing when you can't find a job that you want. Now, supposedly the father may have had health problems. He may have had a stroke and he may have had a broken back at one time. This is what the mother wrote on social media. She wrote that she only makes $40,000. And that a year, and that the father can't work because of his health problems. And she wrote that they didn't have enough money to get a tutor for Ethan. And so obviously they wouldn't have had enough money to pay for the mental health treatment that the school insisted upon that they get within 48 hours, or they would report them to CPS. Now, clearly the parents... they do not want CPS checking up on them, because I think if they came to their house, besides finding a gun in an unlocked drawer, oh, and there were lots of other guns, by the way. This gun was in an unlocked drawer, but when the police came to the house, they found all these other guns also unlocked. I mean, they were big guns, long guns. He theoretically could have taken one of the other guns as well. But anyhow, and also they may well have found signs of the parents being alcoholics. So they did not want CPS nosing around their home. Now, when I come back, or when we come back, stay tuned, I will tell you more about the psychodynamics of the family and the interesting interview that the ex-girlfriend of the father gave, which sheds further light on they are not on the father, at least. And also the mother. She does talk about the mother not being upstanding members of society. So I think it's pretty unanimous. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking today about Michigan school shooter, a terrorist. That is, in fact, what he has been charged with. And according to Michigan law, he could well fit that charge, meet that charge. I want to go now into how Ethan Crumbly fits the profile of the typical school shooter. We see this time and time again. And yet the people who could stop him don't, end up not stopping him. Now, of course, oh, and I want to make sure that I mention this. Before I get into the profile, I want to mention one thing. Not only is it the parents who are primarily to blame for turning him into a terrorist or a school shooter, but in terms of missing the warning signs, the school is to blame as well. And it's so sad. But both the parents, I mentioned how the parents are throwing the son under the bus to help themselves. The school is trying to, scurry out of this as well. So the parents and the school are like cockroaches. When you turn the light on and the cockroaches scurry all around, they are scurrying to try to avoid blame. Now, what could the school have done differently? How could the school have prevented it? They could have prevented it too, and there are going to be lawsuits upon lawsuits, not only against the parents. Parents don't have any money, so good luck to the people who sue them. But, and I don't even know. And it's funny, in one of the mother's social posts, when she was talking about only making $40,000 and not being able to afford a tutor, and having to go without car insurance. So somehow I doubt that the parents have insurance that would cover their son being a school shooter. But in any case, certainly the school has insurance. And the school, what did the school do wrong? Well, the first day when they saw that he was looking through his phone, trying to find ammunition, and they tried to reach the parents and they couldn't reach the parents. They should have done more. They should have perhaps held him at school until the parents came to get him so that they could tell them what they told them the second day. But if they would have let him return to class, it would have happened anyway. What the school should have done, if they didn't do it more on the first day when they saw him looking for ammunition, Googling for ammunition, they certainly should have, after they found that drawing with his cry for help and his picture, did he have to draw them a picture? He did draw them a picture of what he was planning to do. And yet when the parents came and they didn't want to take him home because they wanted to go to work, they didn't want to be bothered with him, right? They didn't want to believe that there was anything wrong with what he was doing, right? They didn't take it seriously. Obviously, they didn't ask what was in his backpack. And yes, it is almost as though they were purposely setting him up. And I'll get more into that. But I mean, what the school should have done on that second day, the morning of the crime, the morning of the shooting, what they should have done if the parents just left, the school should have called 911 and should have either given him to the police and or had the police bring him to an emergency room to hospitalize him for danger to self and danger to others. Now, apparently there were school counselors there on both days after the ammunition search and on the morning of the shooting with the picture. And these counselors, who should be fired right away and whose licenses should be taken away because they're idiots, they supposedly like asked questions whether to decide to see whether he was a danger to self or others, and they were satisfied that he wasn't. Well, you know, how long did they spend asking questions? And did they ask them with the parents, you know, in front of the parents? That's what it seems like. They asked him this with the parents there. So would Ethan have told them the truth if it wasn't in front of his parents? Would he have, you know, confessed, yes, indeed, I am thinking of killing myself and killing other kids? In any case, they misjudged the whole thing. They didn't call 911. They just sent him back to class, and then this is what happened. Okay, so best terms of fitting the profile of the typical school shooter, he has all the critical points. He was a sad, lonely child. I know that from the description of his half brother, who actually described him as, you know, who was shocked that he did this, and who said he was just an average kid, a normal kid. He used to play sports in middle school, but then he didn't in high school. So isn't that a warning sign? Why isn't he playing sports in high school? Is he depressed? Does he feel left out, isolated from the other kids? What's going on? Do his parents not want him to be out of the house? They want him to be home all the time. Anyway, this half-brother described them as taking the school bus together, coming home, and just playing video games. He said also sometimes they went in the backyard and played basketball. So basically, he was describing a very sad and lonely life. And, the key thing is, this half-brother went home to his mother, because he didn't get along with Ethan's mother. The half-brother was from the father, James Crumbly, and from a woman who has been described both as a girlfriend and as an ex-wife, so that's not clear. But in any case, so he left this woman, this mother of the half-brother, in Florida, and he went to Michigan and married Jennifer. No big prize there. Anyhow, so getting back to Ethan. So he was sad and lonely. He was abused or neglected by his parents, certainly neglected and possibly abused. He had learning problems. That's from the mother saying that she couldn't get him a tutor. He had mental health problems, which are obvious from his desperate notes, including he wrote a note saying, "The thoughts won't stop. Help me." You remember? Now, those thoughts could either be an indication of obsessive-compulsive disorder, or it could be a sign of hallucinations, hearing voices, command hallucinations, which could be a sign of schizophrenia beginning. Then also, it seems unlikely that he has had any psychiatric treatment, or if he has had, it would be insufficient treatment. And that is a typical sign of a school shooter. Sometimes they have had some kind of mental health treatment, but usually they fall through the cracks. That's like Nicholas Cruz. He's a great example of that. He had some treatment, but then he fell through the cracks. And the treatment really wasn't good at any time. They didn't realize just how sick he was, seriously mentally ill he was. Then Ethan had an obsession with violent video games, and he told the school when they found his pictures I think primarily it was the picture or maybe it was when they looked at his notebook and they saw his plans. He said that it was an outline or a description of a video game he was going to create. And he said he wanted to become a video game creator, which tells you the impact of his obsession with hours of violent video games. And then access to guns, and then bullying. Now, I believe that he was bullied. The school has tried to say that he wasn't bullied because they're protecting themselves. But there have been some kids who have said that he was bullied, and clearly they saw him being bullied. And you know, the fact that the school is trying to deny it just means this is another example of them trying to protect themselves. Now, how did the family cause this to happen? The most likely explanation, one explanation that maybe their defense attorneys are going to use, this hasn't been reported as in the media anywhere, but it's possible that the family is going to say, the parents are going to say that they were trying to protect Ethan from the horrible world that he lived in at school where he was bullied. In other words, they could well have identified with him because they feel that the world is against them. You know, they were never able to make a success of themselves, and they were feeling angry and entitled to more. And so just like they feel that the world is against them, they could have bought him a gun to protect himself from these bullies, which could also be a factor in how both of them knew right away upon hearing reports of a school shooting that Ethan had, in fact, gotten revenge against the kids. You know, that he was acting out what they had armed him for. But I don't really, that's being kinder to the parents than I think they deserve. Really, I think what the better explanation or the more important explanation is that it's more likely that his parents simply transmitted their sociopathic ways of being in the world to him. Not that they were trying to protect him from bullies or for him to protect himself against bullies, but, and I'm not saying that they literally told him to shoot up his school, but throughout his childhood, he would have seen how angry they were at the world, how unfair they thought the world was, and how you're entitled to do whatever you want. You remember, like, get a DUI or pass bogus checks, not obey the law. And so this gave him, you know, the permission to act out on what he fantasized doing and learned how to do from his video games, shoot people. So the bottom line is that I believe that Ethan Crumbly's parents turned him into a killing machine, and now they're throwing him under the bus to save themselves. So thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist. If you would like to find out more about terrorism from me, your terrorist therapist, visit my website, terroristtherapist.com. And if you're a parent or teacher and want to build stronger nests for your kids to become more resilient, check out my new award-winning book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's the first and only book about terrorism for kids. You can find it wherever books are sold or directly from the publisher at terrorismforkids.com. Terrorism, the number 4, kids.com. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. We hope listening to the show has made you feel calmer, more resilient, and more able to reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. You can also check out past shows on Renegade Talk Archives for more insights.